So it's Saturday the 3rd of September and we're doing our first recording of the first of the dropping days about the Sea Empress project, and we're here with June and David Glenister. So basically, where were you when it happened?
We were at home in Atlantic View on the top of the hill when it happened.
In Manabir,
yes. But it wasn't really until, of course, it was all publicised on the papers that you knew that the Sea Empress had gone, you know, had been caught on the rocks. Because, of course, at that time, the oil hadn't come in this direction. It was sort of immediately then that it happened. And I had a phone call from my boss, who was the director of the Wildlife Trust, to say, could I go into the office? Because there's obviously going to be a lot of phone calls coming in about what had happened, and that's what I did.
But did it run aground in the night? It was in the, or was it in the, what time of day was it then?
It was,
don't know.
It was early, it must have been during the night, early morning, because that's when I got the phone call to say that I was, would, it would be useful to have me in the office to answer the phone, because there were going to be obviously phone calls coming in to the Wildlife Trust.
So at that time there was no evidence of it on the beaches? Because
no.
I know in the newspapers you can see the sorts of photographs of the lights in the, you know, it looked really illuminated.
Yeah.
It.
Yeah.
So what happened next then, when the true extent?
Well, like, the first we knew about it was because it was dark when we came, by the time we were both working, by the time we come home from work. I got out the car in the drive and there's just this horrible stench. We'd gone off to work that morning, it wasn't round towards this way. By the time I came home, got out the car, there was this horrible, sickly stench because it had come all the way round to Manabir and the wind was blowing it inshore and the smell inshore. So I get out the car, not knowing quite what it was at that time, but assuming, not knowing it was so thick just below where we lived. Went inside and our arrangement at that time, the first one home from work, lit the fire in the lounge, coal fire. So that's what I did. After I lit it, I thought, oh, that's good. There's petrol fumes in that outside, and I've just lit a fire. This has got flames going up the chimney. Nothing I could do about it, obviously. And shut every window and door to try and keep it out. It was seeping in a bit, but not too bad. June came home from work and dashed into the house, and we guessed what it was. You couldn't see anything, and we certainly weren't going to go wandering out that time of night. the smell and the taste just gradually got worse during the night. We had decided that day before we went to work that if it was that bad when we came home at night, we would pack bags and go move out and go and find somebody to look after us for a while. And we sort of thought about who we could go and lumber ourselves on, and which hotels we could go to and how far we had to go. But by the time we came home that next night, the wind, thank goodness, had changed. So it was all still there, but the wind was offshore, blowing the smell out towards the sea, or enough away from the house. So we put up with what smell was still left. And then, of course, when the weekend came, because I can't remember which day in the week it went aground, or when the stuff came round to us, that's when I went out to take all the photos that were immediately below us, you know, below the footpath, up every little crack and all the rocks and everywhere and that sort of thing. And then of course it was a few days well after that when the council and the men turned up to try and remove it.
In between it sort of appearing on the rocks, and there was a lot of publicity and news coverage and about it at the time, or did it take a few days for that to come as well?
No, the news coverage was pretty instantaneous really. It was on the radio and on the television all the time.
So you were watching like the tug operation from the TV, but there was no evidence of it actually locally on the show
yet.
No,
it was too far. I mean, we couldn't see anything from here. We were too far away. But we had the result of it, if you see what I mean.
So you were all waiting for it to come in.
Well, you didn't know which way. It depended on which way the tide went, the tides and the wind went. Because, you know, they were hoping it wouldn't get as far as Tenby, but it did. Mm-hmm. But then, lucky enough, the wind changed and the tides changed and didn't go any further along the coast, really, as far as I can recall. But at those days, don't forget, you only had the radio, newspaper. You didn't have all these modern Fandango things where something can happen in Australia and 2 seconds later, in this country, we all know about it. So it took some time to get round, but we were only really concerned about the mess that it was and what was going to happen where we were. Yes, of course, we talked to the neighbours and this sort of thing, but you certainly, when you saw it, you know, absolutely thick, and the patterns it was making with the tide, turning it and everything else, it was quite picturesque in a nasty sort of way.
Can you remember what your initial feeling was when you actually went down to the beach and saw it?
Having never seen anything like it before, I hadn't... I can't remember what I thought, other than the fact, I suppose, what the devil's it going to do to our house, as it were, or can we start... I mean, say that by now that it wasn't so sickly a smell. It was there, but not as bad. And then, by then, it had gone various other places, so we were... And June was busy at the Wildlife Trust, so I was sort of fend off various things that needed doing. I was just going about whatever.
So immediately you were thinking about how it kind of affected you personally, how it would affect your living. And
yes.
And did you... Obviously, you must have thought about the effect it would have had on the wildlife. Well,
I did. Mm. Obviously, that was my first thought, because, of course, you know, it's a beautiful place. We've got all the birds... There's the stuff on the beach. There's all the little things in, you know, that we don't see, the rock pools and things. And, of course, it's beautiful on Manabir, the beach, for the rock pools. So there's that instant worry about, well, my goodness, what's going to survive? Is it going to survive? And, of course, from my point of view, it was the thought of all these birds being absolutely swamped in this oil and the number that were going to probably perish, and what would be done to help them. But of course, we did have, under my job, as I say, about Wildlife Trust, a lot of the telephone calls that I received were from people who wanted to help. How could they help? What could they do? Most of them were conservationists or naturalists or interested in wildlife and just felt so helpless. And we did have calls from Europe and places like that, from people who really, really wanted to do something. And of course, we were fortunate because there was the Oiled Bird Centre in West Williamston, which Jean Haynes ran, and she always had a little group of people that were always ready to help with trying to clean birds that had been affected. But it was, I think, it was the thought of how long is this going to be here? What damage is it going to do? Okay, I suppose in a way it affected us personally because, of course, living in such a beautiful part, you don't want it to be spoiled. Mm. And what was the reaction? People are going to say, well, we're not going there for our holiday this year because of what's happened. Yeah. There'll be oil everywhere. And it, and of course, it did penetrate into the sand. So, I mean, the sand was oily. Well, and, you know, seeing how things were done and our neighbour at the DAC, I mean, they were right down low, so they probably suffered because they had a little beach and everything near them. But, yeah, I think, first of all, you think personally, but then when you look at the bigger picture, you realise that it's going to affect lots of people, not just you, you know, and that's how it was.
Did you ever feel like, will this ever disappear? Did you ever feel like it wouldn't ever go? How will I ever get rid of all this?
It depends which of the scaremongers you listen to. Because as you can imagine, people jumped on the bandwagon and, oh, you're not going to have this for the 20 years. You can't have this, you can't have that, you can't have this. Because basically, I suppose, nobody really knows. Milford Haven, without being rude, seemed to take had no idea really how to deal with it. Mm. You know, they hadn't got the right tugs and they hadn't got this, that and the other. But all that gets blown up. But in the meantime, it's the job to suss out which is the truth and which is a bit of, you know, jumping on the bandwagon.
Sensationalism.
Because it hadn't happened, and it's the unknown, really. Mm-hmm. You could see what was there. I had no idea how long it was going to go away and how long it would be there. And even, you know, now people think there are still things that are missing from in the rock pools and this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But people said, oh, it takes 100 years, and then you hear... I knew two or three people who ran hotels, and it was gloom and doom, as it was at the end of the year. It wasn't that much gloom and doom. And then, of course, you get the tourists that come down to see it.
Yes.
So, okay, so they had a few more into the hotels then, and people were turning up to have a good look and take a good few photos. So it's a job to tell. I mean, some of it, fair dues, they got people in and they could get sorted out. But it's the stuff that was down the bottom that was coming up for a long, long time and appearing on the rocks below us for a long, long time after. And there were various, you know, I didn't get involved in doing anything. June was busy enough and I was just, I mean, about what I was employed to do. So I'd go off to work each day and because it was that time of year. So it was only really during the weekends you could actually really see what went on unless you happened to come home during the day.
So what was your first memory of the initial people who were cleaning it up then?
Rather them than me. When you see the mess that those lads were in, you know, absolutely covered in it. They must have been feeling sick as well, because when you agitated the stuff, it's a taste that you smell that you taste for days after. Mm. Although it had gone from our house, the smell, it was still there, and we were just hoping that the wind didn't change and bring more in. But lucky enough, it saved Pembrokeshire the wind and that. Mm. They just changed them. A lot of it went out.
So on a practical level, what were they wearing and? Did they have masks on? How were they protecting themselves?
Well, you need to look at the photos I've given to Abby out there.
But yes, they were all kitted out.
Oh, they were all kitted out. Like, you know, every farmer that got a tractor with a bowser on the back was there. Then, of course, they were having to take this oil, like it's all right, picking it up.
Take it away.
You know, and they were taking it to the oil recovery places and at the refineries and this sort of thing. But because, as far as I know, it was a new experience, they really weren't geared up to deal with it. And there's a long, long story all about that. But the clean-up, and there's lots of photos of it about. But the lads we saw were all in yellow
oil skins.
Boots. But I don't know that they could use those oil skins again. In other words, once they'd worn that day, I think they had to get more in to wear after that because the state they were in and this sort of thing.
I did see some photos in the archives and of them sort of literally sweeping and...
Oh yeah, that's all you could do.
Didn't they put it in oil into skips?
Anything that could actually get it up off the beach. Mm. Then, of course, when you get it off the beach, you've got to take it somewhere, and this sort of thing. But then it kept coming in. Of course, they'd clear the beach today, shall we say. Then tomorrow, the tide would bring more in round from the rocks because they could not get down to the rocks below us. There were great indentations in the. That's why I took photos, you know, vertically down in the gullies. Well, they couldn't get down there. They did get down with some, because they managed to get a few bowsers on the cliffs and put their hose down to suck the worst of it out. But it was coming out for, well, years after, little bits, and it would get it stuck here, there and everywhere.
And what about the village, Manavir Village, and the people in the community? And how did it affect you as a whole?
Don't actually know, because we lived up on top and we were both working and we went that way to work. Okay. Whilst we lived in Manavir, as somebody said, we never really lived in Manavir. although we had a lot to do. But yeah, they were all concerned and everything else. But day to day, I don't know, because basically we went to work and at the weekends we were doing what, you know, we were involved, but not... So I don't actually know how the shop... Because it was winter, don't forget. So therefore, it's never as busy in this part of the world in the winter as you know, everybody... disappears off. So I don't actually know.
So I'm just trying to get a picture of what comparing it to what it would be like now, because we're so used to hearing about these big events.
Yes.
Do you think, I mean, when you went to work, was it kind of something that you just all talked about, or was it most people quite practical and just got on with
it? I suppose we did, because I was in the building industry and quite a few of the contractors provided men and equipment. So you'd find out that a building project was being delayed slightly because, you know, they were helping the county council out. I think it was the county council organising it. Help them, particularly if they got a JCB or a digger of some sort, to help try and sort it out. But yeah, it was talked about, but you all felt totally helpless because those who should be doing something possibly weren't doing it as quick as you thought they ought to be doing it. Yeah. And then you hear that more have seeped out and then more have seeped out. Oh, no, it wasn't. Yes, it was. No, it wasn't. Mm. And...
So it's all hands on deck, but the people in control.
Well, we don't know, but it just, you know, it was new. It caught everybody cold, and things changed.
But of course, from my point of view, I was talking about it all day, because you know I was there in the office. So we had two ladies who, and Margaret is one of them, who's coming for an interview later this morning. And they were dealing with the media, journalists, television cameras and things. So they were out on the scene, all the time. And, of course, the worry was Skomer and Skokum Islands, which the Wildlife Trust were responsible for, just the dreadful thought that, unfortunately, they weren't affected. But it would have been absolutely horrific if anything had happened there with all the wildlife. You know, it's not just the birds there. There are so many things in the rocks and things down there. So, yes, obviously it was a topic all day, really.
And where were you based then at the time?
Haverford West. It was the Wildlife Trust. It was called the Dyfed Wildlife Trust in those days, and they had their office in Market Street in Haverford West. So it was.
And were people ringing you up saying, I've got a bird, I don't know what to do with it?
Yes, questions like that. Where should we take them? What should we do with them? Don't attempt to do anything with it. Take it to wherever. Now, of course, they were taking hundreds of birds away down to Devon, I think it was, where the RSPCA had a big centre where they were cleaning them. And as I say, Jean obviously was limited as to the number of birds that she could take, but then there were all these calls from people who wanted to help, so you could direct the people to the right sort of place, really, for that.
Involved in just transporting these birds as well, helping to take them from...
If they've got, yes, you would just say put it in a cardboard box and take it. It was in West Williamston where the local one was. Basically that was it. People were very good and were offering to help in any way they can, which could mean transporting people, transporting birds. But as a hands-on thing for individuals, it wasn't that easy. You couldn't go and help clear up the oil or anything because you needed to have the right equipment and you needed to know what you were doing, you know. So, yeah.
And I suppose the fact that the tides moved the slick Manabeer Tembe Way saved Skomer and Skokum Island. Yeah. Had it gone the other way, so it's this coast that took the brunt of it rather than going, you know, northwest, because the weather came that way and sent it round this way from the haven.
And I suppose the fact it was so visual meant that more people would help, because if it had been out more that way, it might have been quite a different story in a way.
Because quite a lot of it did get washed out, you know, and we were all hoping that it wouldn't come in, that what was in was all it was going to stay in, and I think generally that's what happened.
It dissipated. So, you know, we had to deal with the situation as it was at the time. And it took some long run, but was still going on for weeks after the event. But the bulk of it was dealt with as really very quickly when you consider that this happened and they've got to get everything together and get acting as quickly as they could. And I just had to have admiration for the men who were doing the cleaning up because it was. And of course, you see, Manabeer is known as a storm beach. So that's what, and of course, so therefore, there was a lot coming in because of the fact that it is at the beach where so much comes in. But yeah, I mean, you know, and I don't know, sometimes when you think back, now we're talking about it, I wonder what thanks they really got and whether any of them were affected physically
long term
as a result, long term after the smell.
Because we were sort of nearly sick that night.
You know?
You
forget things like that, you know? And yeah, I wonder how many people, sort of 20 years on, have said, oh, if I hadn't been involved in that, perhaps I wouldn't have such a bad chest. Or, you know, the things
that.
And that is the thing I think we all have in our memory, is that awful taste. And as you say, it's your throat that suffers when you're breathing it in.
It's one of those things, even now, nobody's really come up with an answer. Has it everything returned? There's a gentleman that you may be seeing interviewing sometime, is absolutely convinced it hasn't in the rock pools because he used to bring his daughters down here. And he knows that it hasn't, a lot of things haven't come back. And yet lots of things have. You know, it wasn't that long, many years ago, there was a basking shark in the bay here, which I could see from up there walking down to get me paper in the morning. It's a great big black shadow lurking in the bay. So, you know, certain things, not that we'd get that many of them down here.
But I know there were several of the people, especially people involved with Orielton, the Field Studies Centre, and Dale, of course, the Field Studies Centre there. I mean, most of their scientists and things were very actively involved, continually after the event, going down, checking, you know, the beaches and the rock pools, places like that, to see if certain things had recovered or not. And yeah, some, you know, the, as the years went by, the news was getting more positive.
I think also at the time it probably crosses your mind, we wouldn't want to sell our house at the minute because who would want to buy it with this lot down the bottom? Yeah. Now, we weren't intending to sell the house at the time, but those are sort of things that cross your mind, that, you know, nobody would want to buy it. And yes, there were people about having a look over the cliff and down on the coastal footpath, which runs, you know, along all the way around there, which is where I took the photographs from, you know, well below our house. but there were people down there, you know, just sort of literally came for the day to see because they didn't believe what they were seeing on the telly.
Yeah.
And this sort of thing. And
that didn't help in some ways because, of course, they were then getting in the way of all the people that were trying to do the job they were supposed to be doing, you know?
And then sort of, getting in the way because when they cleared the stuff off the beach, they needed to clean the wagons that took the stuff away and the car park that was used, you know, to put everything in. You know, it's people's curiosity, isn't it? You know, and something that nobody had ever seen. A lot of them came down to help in this sort of thing, but a lot of them were just curiosity.
But I think looking on the positive side now, when you come to Manabir and you go to... I mean, I was on the beach a few weeks ago with the grandchildren. We'd come rock pooling. And you wouldn't know that anything like that had ever happened there, you know? So we have to look on the good side. We've suffered with the bad things, you know, and now we just hope that it never happens again.
I was just going to say, do you...
There's always that underlying...
lessons have been learnt, and we just hope that we never have to use the lessons that
again. Well, yeah, the theory with the modern stuff, and they've got proper-sized tugs down there now, and they've got other centres down there that could deal with it and know how to deal with it, and they do exercises and this sort of thing. Yeah. But... as far as I know, it never happened, certainly in this part of the world before. Mm. I know we had the Torrey Canyon way out in wherever that was many, many years ago, yes. But that never sort of came this way. Yeah. Well, yes, that was further out, but that was something that should have woken people up. But this was in the mouth of the Haven, and it should have been, you know, but there we are.
The one thing I want to ask is, when do you think people and families were brave enough to go back in the water?
That's interesting because I knew some ladies. We knew two people in the village that would go swimming every day,
and a man, and one man.
Oh well, yeah, it was Jonah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And once it had all been, it seemed to be that the following summer they were back doing their swimming in the water. Mm. Yes. So both one lady and one gentleman used to go every day.
Yes.
Eddie and Joan used to go every day for a swim. So, I mean, if that's anything to go by.
Except the day the shark appeared. I was sitting on the bench.
I'm just thinking, because if they were talking about the summer, the Easter season, I wonder if people went swimming in that after it in the Easter then.
I would have done. I mean, I can't answer that, honestly, but I would have thought probably with caution if they thought they were going in the water.
But I think after that, when people did go in and they came out, and there were probably signs around, I can't remember, saying, be careful. Mm. And the people went in, they came out with a black bit of oil. And there were little spots of oil that got washed up and on the beach.
Yes, be careful where you put your feet when you're walking.
A little bit rocks, that's right. Remember it, on your flip-flops.
Yeah, you just had to be aware and deal with it at the time. Because they knew where they were coming to. So if they went in, they would expect it. I suspect the boatman was exactly the same. You know, I said to Abby, she needs to talk to the lobster men that were lobster fishing around here, and the fishermen from this sort of thing. It was mostly lobsters around here, but that time of year they'd have been out there every day.
And there was a ban, wasn't there?
Yeah. Yes. And this sort of thing. But there were a lot of things. Had you known all those years ago that you were going to ask to put the memories down now, right? You'd have made a few more notes or taken a few more photos, but you don't do.
Well, you get on with life. You're a practical.
attack on it, don't you? Think, and maybe now, because we live in a different world, can you imagine the amount of documentation that would be available?
It would drive you mad.
It would drive
you mad. At least you could turn the telly off and not look at the paper, and that was it. You know, I mean, so these days, as you say, it's on this, that, and now, and it's all around the world.
But then it's all over really quickly.
And we've even got to look back to what happened in with the shale oil in America that time. And that's a different situation, but I mean, you know,
similar sort of thing.
I mean, we're not getting as much oil in as we used to. I mean, I can remember when we first moved to Pembrokeshire, and there was I mean, these enormous super tankers were coming. Can you imagine what would have happened?
We used to go down and sit on the Wrathom with the kids when they were young and watch the tankers come in at the weekend and go out.
But you know, there is less coming in now. And as you say, some of it we can't. Less oil. There are other things coming in, you're quite right, that we don't know much about, really. And there are, even now, there are slight accidents when they're mooring up. You know, you read about these.
Well, bunker out at sea, you get an odd bit, but not like it was.
But I think, I mean, I think now the situation is such that if anything like that happened again, we would be prepared. Much quicker. Things would be dealt with much quicker than they were, you know.
And the other thing these days, everybody would be trying to sue somebody.
Yes, they would.
In those days, it wasn't litigious as it is in these days. Everybody, as soon as something goes wrong, they want to try and sue somebody.
They probably wouldn't be allowed to help on the beach, if you think about that.
Health and safety.
Who would be out? There would only be professional people that would be allowed to help.
That's right.
We're at a disadvantage in that way.
You wouldn't get all the people offering, but they wouldn't be allowed to. Health and safety or somebody would turn up, and that would be it.
Just thinking about sort of raising awareness of the local community at the time, realising what they had, what wildlife, how it had affected them. It must have given the local people a much bigger perspective of what they have to lose.
I think a lot of people don't appreciate their environment at all. You know, the beach is there, that's fine, but other than that, they don't really absorb all that is around them. That, you know, they're very fortunate to live here, and we take it all for granted, let's be honest.
We
take everything for granted, and it's not until an incident like that that you suddenly think, oh my gosh,
I never thought it would affect you. So 20 years on, what do you think of the positives?
The positives are, as far as I can see, that the environment is really doing very well here. I mean, I don't go doing a lot of rock pooling and things, so I don't know. But it seems to me, looking at the situation now, that yes, we're back to where we were, but we've got to make sure that we keep it like this. And the problem is, of course, now we start looking at the fact that what's coming in on the tides every day. You know, we need to clean the seas up.
So we need
to be aware of our responsibilities of discarding. And this is the other problem now, is that the beaches get so full of
rubbish.
That plastic. Are thrown off of, and they're all...
Where does plastic come from?
They throw them overboard, don't they, these big ships? Yeah, the plastics, yes.
That's very
interesting. It's a vicious
circle,
isn't it?
So it's still an oil disaster, but in a different shape.
In different ways.
In chunky lumps of plastic.
Yes, it's very true.
The other good thing is the fact that they're more geared up. They've got the more proper equipment. And if anything did happen now, I sincerely hope, well, I guess they've learnt from what they didn't do at the time. So, you know, if anything did happen, because they've got double-hulled boats and this sort of thing a lot more and everything else, so it shouldn't happen, but they should be far more geared up for it.
And by the sound of it, it was waiting to happen.
It was,
yes, it was. They didn't learn from the Torrey Canyon all those years ago. No, it wasn't affected. Don't think it affected our shores at all, from what I recall of it.
But I think, too, what we need to remember is the terrible responsibility that lies on the people, like from the harbour, the county council, that the responsibility is great on their shoulders if anything like that should happen again. And people will be wanting to ask questions.
Yeah.
Why?
But it makes you wonder. I mean, so the County Council did a lot of the clearing up. Who would be responsible now? Because things change. They all change what they're responsible
for. That's a really interesting question. Who would be able to do it? Like,
it'd be interesting to try and get somebody to put their hand up, Port Authority or whatever, who would be responsible for clearing it up.
It would probably be a team of experts from a different part of the world.
They would be called in, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Wouldn't it?
Yeah, like people are called in now for any events. You've only got to think of earthquakes and things like tsunamis and things like that. And
yeah, people are drawn in. People would not be able to go near it.
People are all
well,
drawn
no,
in.
They would.
No.
Well, anything else to add?
Not really.
I think you've done an excellent job.
Oh, thank you.
An excellent job. And you can do plenty of editing.
Wow. Oh, thank you very much. It's really interesting. It's great.
Thank you.